Any questions, ladies and gentlemen, later on, through the live show, Minister of Foreign will be all the happy to answer any queries you may possibly have. We'll move on to our next speaker, ladies and gentlemen. I'd like to invite Dr. Rafael Bostic, Assistant Secretary, Department of Housing and Urban Development, USA. Dr. Bostic was sworn in as HUD's Assistant Secretary for Policy Development and Research on the 16th of July 2009, following his confirmation by the U.S. Senate. As a key member of HUD's senior leadership, Dr. Bostic is the principal advisor to the Secretary on overall departmental policy, program evaluations, demonstrations, and research. An expert on housing and home ownership, Dr. Bostic served as a professor in the University of Southern California's School of Policy, Planning and Development, where he examined how credit markets, financing and policy enhance household access to economic and social amenities. Ladies and gentlemen, Dr. Bostic will be presenting on how the United States is using housing as a platform for driving sustainable outcomes. Ladies and gentlemen, Dr. Rafael Bostic.
Thank you for that kind introduction, and good morning, everyone. Looking at this, it reminds me of being a professor, and all of my students always sat all the way at the back. So I'm feeling quite at home here in Singapore. I also wanted to say, I don't think I've ever been at an event with an MC who reminded me, or made me feel like I was on TV or at a professional event. Absolutely remarkable. You're doing a tremendous job, so thank you. It's truly an honor to be here representing the United States government, the Obama administration, and the United States Department of Housing and Urban Development. We affectionately call our agency HUD, so I'll be talking about HUD as we go through today. Given this week's focus on charting new frontiers in sustainable housing, I'm thrilled to be here in Singapore, experiencing firsthand this wonderful country. Yesterday, I was treated to a wonderful morning with Shyam Rajathorai, wife of Subhraj Rajathorai, one of Singapore's star birders and naturalists. I'm a bird watcher by trade and very much enjoyed the sights of Singapore's nature, including crocodiles, macaques, the changeable lizard, in addition to a variety of beautiful and colorful birds. Truly been a spectacular experience. I'm also honored to be here to celebrate the exceptional history and achievements of the Housing and Development Board through its 50 years of transforming housing in Singapore. In case you missed it, last week's musical was interesting, engaging, entertaining, and educational. I found many similarities between the early public housing experiences here in Singapore and those in the United States, and must say that the outcomes here have been outstanding. I did have one question though. Is this going to be on the web? Are we going to see this on YouTube? I would strongly encourage it. It was fantastic. And for those of you, for some of the performers in here, I think you may have a future American Idol, so you should make it on the web. It's particularly an honor to be here on behalf of HUD Secretary Sean Donovan, who in just one short year has charted new frontiers in U.S. housing policy as well. He's led HUD and the administration in tackling the housing crisis on every front, has helped American families keep their homes from foreclosure, and is changing the way we do business as an agency, making government an efficient and effective partner to the families and communities that we serve. So in the company of such visionary housers and urban planners, as well as distinguished guests, I'm honored to have the opportunity today to share with you our national vision for making socially and environmentally sustainable communities rooted in safe, decent, and affordable housing, a reality for families in the U.S. and across the globe. I had prepared remarks that were written before I got on the plane, but as I was looking them over during the flight, I decided to change them up a bit. And this new approach that I'm taking really grows out of two realities. First, relative to our size, the United States is not the leader in sustainability or green building. You have seen and will see some wonderful examples offered by Singapore, Australia, and others. And we have some examples of great models as well in the US. In California, SB 375, this is a piece of legislation that was recently passed, represents our country's first legislation to explicitly target greenhouse gas reduction through integrated land use planning, less driving of cars and trucks, fewer regulations for energy efficient construction, and the creation of more walkable communities. In Denver, the metropolitan region is taking matters into their own hands with their newly capitalized transit-oriented development. It's a fund to preserve the affordability of neighborhoods served by the Fast Tracks expansion. Denver's plan is to build more than 100 miles of new light rail, commuter rail, and bus rapid transit lines that link the 32 communities surrounding the central city of Denver. And in Secretary Donovan's hometown of New York, he took a similar approach as housing commissioner, creating a $200 million fund combining public, private, and philanthropic capital to meet a market need, namely capital that could be deployed quickly and flexibly to buy properties and land for affordable development. I know that you will see other U.S. examples during this conference, and I talked with Peter Loach earlier today. I know he's going to present, and I'm really looking forward to that. But by and large, they have not been produced with significant leadership from the federal government. So I want to be upfront and honest in this regard. We are here to learn as much as anything else. I and my special assistant, Becky Parks. Becky, where are you? Raise your hand, stand up, let everyone see you. We're here to take as much in as possible. And so for the rest of you who are here, if you see her in a session, make sure she's paying attention, please. The second reality, and this is closely related to the first, is that I am taking steps to make sure that the U.S. Department of Housing and Urban Development, that HUD, and indeed the federal government at large, engages the international community in a significant way. We all have a stake in this. Energy use and its impact on the environment is something that links us all. We cannot afford to fail here. And in all of this, housing is a common factor. It is a foundation upon which everything we are planning depends. Before I go further, let me tell you a little bit more about myself and the work my office does at HUD. As HUD's Assistant Secretary for Policy Development and Research, a position I've held since July 2009, I bring to both this conference and to HUD my background as an economist and most recently as a professor in the University of Southern California's School of Policy, Planning, and Development. My USC background also has given me links to Singapore. There are many international scholars in the field here that work in the country, and the National University is world-renowned for its path-breaking research. My links have grown considerably closer and stronger recently as my colleague and friend Yongming Ding joined the faculty here in the fall. I am certain that his addition will help NUS leave a major imprint on the field. At HUD, my office is comprised of a multidisciplinary team of economists, analysts, engineers, architects, and social scientists, and is responsible for providing economic information and analyses of housing and community development statistics and other data. We perform both short and long-term analysis and evaluations to help HUD's leadership make informed decisions on policies and programs, as well as budget and legislative proposals. These activities provide the department and the nation with current information on housing needs, market conditions, and research on important housing and community development issues. But obviously, you don't need to have a staff of economists and analysts working for you to know that as we gather today, we face the largest wave of urban growth in human history. For the first time ever, more than half of our global population lives in metropolitan areas. By 2030, almost 5 billion people will live in urban areas. These developments bring enormous challenges to deliver healthcare services and safe drinking water as two examples, to provide reliable, energy-efficient transportation, and to build a solid foundation for economic growth that lifts up all of our peoples. In the United States, where our largest 100 metropolitan areas account for 65% of our population and 75% of our economic output, this trend is long underway. And our population is expected to grow by another 50% in the first half of this century. This at a time, at the same time, we have wastewater systems that are over a century old, schools that are in dire need of repair, an inefficient transportation system, and a housing policy with too little emphasis on affordable rental options. While few have made the connection between the sustainability of our metropolitan areas and our recent economic crisis, if you look closely, you'll see that the neighborhoods facing the brunt of the crisis, those with the highest foreclosure rates and the deepest job losses, are often the least sustainable, with the least access to transportation, the most troubled schools, and the least economic opportunity. Indeed, for the United States, the housing and economic crisis, with millions of foreclosures that have sent our economy into a tailspin, has pulled back the curtain on the unsustainable nature of our growth, showing us how supposedly affordable homes were built in new neighborhoods that turned out not to be affordable after all. The systemic nature of our metro areas and the mismatch between where people live and where jobs are located impacts all American families in a multitude of ways. For many families working in metropolitan areas, their combined housing and transportation costs now average 57% of their income. A 2005 study by the Center for Housing Policy found that for every dollar a working family saved on housing by moving to ex-urban locations, it spent 77 cents more on transportation. So there was actually little savings at all. These disparate special development patterns have also negatively impacted public health, air quality, and the availability of open space, as well as climate change. The housing and economic crisis also highlighted the fragility of many communities, as foreclosures in urban cores of older industrial cities like Detroit or Cleveland rolled back 15 years of gains in neighborhood revitalization. And it highlighted the disparate impact that the crisis had on people of color in our country, resulting in a dramatic drop in homeownership rates for African American and Latinos. Right now, some estimate that we have enough large lot, single family homes to last us until the year 2025. At the same time, we have this enormous unsold inventory. There's a historic number of people who've lost their homes. So the crisis we're in right now in the U.S. is fundamentally about housing that doesn't meet the needs of its people. It's about people not having enough choice, and those choices, and the choices that they do have, not being affordable. So the challenge of this moment is clear: to build communities in the most holistic way possible, sustainably, so that we can meet the needs of today without compromising the futures of our children and grandchildren. And the challenge is to establish outcomes that reflect our shared values including a more competitive economy, lower energy costs and increased energy independence, shorter travel times and lower travel costs, and healthier, more inclusive, and diverse communities. You might think of these as the environmental, economic, and social sustainability principles laid out by Ministers Mahbub Tan and John Dabafori in prior speeches this morning. We are all talking about the same thing. And this notion of the three types of sustainability is vital, and it has not been lost on us in the United States. We know that just as important as connecting people to jobs is ensuring that the people upon whom our communities depend, those who teach in our schools, police our streets, and keep our small businesses strong, can themselves afford to live in the communities they serve. You might think more Barcelona and less Atlanta. These are the ideas that bring us here today, and they are what drive the Obama administration's sustainability vision. Giving American families the choice they deserve starts with reorienting federal policy so that we don't view cities, suburbs, and rural areas around them as separate entities, but rather as an integrated whole that shares challenges and solutions. The state and local investments I mentioned earlier, the California and the Denver cases, though they're exciting and very promising, are only the first steps towards building sustainable communities. It's clear from the struggles of so many of our communities and metropolitan regions today that the federal government can and must play a bigger role in helping drive and support these innovations to deal effectively with the broad forces that have created such tremendous hardship. My country's commitment to sustainable growth is embodied in President Obama, who has pursued a robust sustainability agenda since coming into office just 1 year ago. Rejecting the false choice between investing in clean energy and economic growth, he's instead championing a 21st century energy policy that will address the threat of climate change and reduce dangerous dependence on foreign oil, while simultaneously creating millions of new jobs. And with 20% of our country's carbon emissions coming from residential buildings, we know that tackling climate change literally does start at home. And we're beginning to do this, from making historic investments in renewable energy to raising fuel efficiency standards for cars and for trucks. But it also depends on international collaboration, demonstrated by the meaningful and unprecedented step forward on international climate negotiations that we made with the Copenhagen Accord. And we're building on the progress made at Copenhagen through initiatives like the Energy and Climate Partnership of the Americas, a voluntary and flexible framework for advancing energy security and combating climate change. But more must be done. And that's why across the administration, you're seeing a new level of international cooperation on all fronts. From our hosting of World Habitat Day in October of 2009, to our upcoming participation in the World Urban Forum in Rio de Janeiro in March. I hope to see you all there in a few weeks. And I also hope to see you all in Madrid for the Solar Decathlon in June. We are very pleased that Spain has taken this up, and we're looking forward to our U.S. universities competing strongly and bravely against those in the rest of the world. So indeed, my agency is taking a leadership role in engaging the international community on issues of sustainability. And that's why I'm proud today to make my first public comments here in Singapore on a new conception for HUD's Office of International and Philanthropic Innovation, which will now explore potential avenues for collaboration with other nations, both in terms of policy and information sharing. I have directed that this office reach out and engage innovators worldwide and help bolster an already strong international community of experts committed to making positive change. We are bringing on new staff including the talented Ana Maria Arquilamos, who will lead it, and are giving this important area renewed attention. This is a very important venture for us, one that blends the best research and practice so that good ideas are recognized faster and spread aggressively, so they make big differences in people's lives. Ultimately, I hope this will enable us to learn from the best practices of other nations and provide insights as to how we can drive and accelerate the administration's sustainability agenda. I mentioned two challenges earlier, one being the challenge of building communities sustainably, and the other being to do so in a way that enhances economic competitiveness, reduces environmental impacts, and improves quality of life. Again, environmental, economic, and social. I also wanted to mention, on the social point, I was very pleased that Minister Coria Corredor mentioned inclusivity and inclusion as part of this. Sustainability need not equal exclusion. It's something that's been a source of concern in the United States. And we are conducting research and spending a lot of energy to make sure we understand and make sure that when we pursue our sustainability principles in practice, that we include all people in society, including those with the least among us. It's very important. So we have the first two challenges, and I just wanted to point out that there's a third one. And this third challenge is a particularly big one. That challenge is institutional, and it places major constraints on how we as the United States federal government can shape local land use, planning, and construction practices. Unlike Spain and Finland, our federal government has virtually no say in establishing building codes. This is done at the local level, meaning that broad policy changes in standards are going to be difficult for us to make. And unlike Singapore, where the vast majority of housing is public housing, the public housing stock in the U.S. is a very small fraction of the overall housing market. This means that we must rely quite heavily on the private and nonprofit sectors for innovation in new construction technologies for energy efficiency. And third, land use in the U.S. is very much a local issue. It is very hard for the federal government to dictate to localities and regions how they should use resources to locate housing, transportation, retail, and business in an integrated and sustainable way. The new city concept and approach this conference is highlighting is unlikely to work for us. So we have crafted our policies using a different strategic approach. I call the strategy Work with the Willing, and it involves partnering with those already believing in and willing to invest in sustainable principles. We expect that the success of these early pilots will show others the tremendous benefits that are available. And we hope that this will induce them to follow the lead and make similar investments. Indeed, that's the idea behind almost all of the Obama administration's efforts. The White House Office of Urban Affairs seeks to nurture these kinds of efforts and bring some of the best ideas developed at the local level to the national stage, helping localities and metro areas link their transportation and housing investments. The livability partnership that Secretary Donovan has forged with the Department of Transportation and our Environmental Protection Agency, rightly came to HUD, allows us to begin targeting our investments in specific cities and regions in a coordinated way. And most significantly for HUD, this approach drives the philosophy of our new Office of Sustainable Housing and Communities, which we see as the center point for all of HUD's sustainability initiatives. Driving zoning and land use reform at the city level, this office will ensure we get the density we need to be environmentally sustainable, and also the greater mix of uses and incomes we need to become socially and economically sustainable. To this end, we will soon announce the availability of $140 million in planning and challenge grants offered by the office to communities across the United States. These grants will connect our housing investments at the federal level to transportation, land use decisions, and philanthropic and private investment at the local level. In addition, this office will take a lead role in fostering greater sustainability through other innovative connections between housing and transportation. As I said earlier, the average American low-income working family spends nearly 60% of their income on housing and transportation combined. And yet, because mortgages don't factor in how much it costs to drive to work or take your children to school, our housing finance system has continued to drive the construction of housing in the least sustainable places. Using detailed mapping of transportation costs, we're developing a new product, which I call a transportation efficient mortgage. Underwriting for this new mortgage will account for a home's proximity to jobs and to schools. Using advances in data and private sector actors, this is an example of a new place-based approach, one that will drive much broader change than government could do alone. But sustainability isn't just about building communities that are environmentally sustainable. As Minister Mavo Tan noted, it's also about making them socially and innovative and economically sustainable, creating real opportunity and breaking up the intense concentration of poverty in our inner cities, as has been mentioned before. I had a conversation last night with the Deputy Prime Minister, who told me that he thought that HDB's integration policies were perhaps the most important contribution that they've made to Singapore society, as they have shaped people's experiences in schools and in other places. Well, we are working to try and replicate that success. That's why we're engaging our partners on the ground in our cities to extend transformation efforts beyond just public housing and to consider entire neighborhoods. Our Choice Neighborhoods Initiative challenges communities to link housing interventions more closely with school reform and early childhood innovations. This linkage between housing, neighborhood, jobs, and education is central to a sustainable community, and it's one that we all need to take quite seriously. I've talked about a few HUD departmental initiatives. Let me talk about a few that are specific to my Office of Policy Development and Research. Initiatives that in particular seek to drive better evidence-based policymaking. I've already mentioned the Office of International and Philanthropic Innovation. That's a big one. But we are also committing about $2.5 million to pursue a new research agenda on sustainability and energy efficiency. Moreover, I'm pushing to begin a new building technologies program that provides financial support for engineers doing basic research on how to build better, more efficient buildings and build them faster and for less money. Like Minister Bhavpuri, we are looking at technologies that permit real-time monitoring and performance of buildings, that monitor how these buildings perform in real time so that adjustments can be made and to make sure that these buildings continue to operate at their highest efficiency. Singapore's Building Research Institute, I think, might be a model for me to understand better as we move forward with this initiative, and I look forward to learning more about this during my stay here in Singapore. Further, I am leading a new interagency geospatial working group using geographic information systems. And the mission of this working group is to provide communities with better information so that they can better understand development and demographic patterns to make more high-quality, sustainable decisions and address community resilience and climate adaptation. We've been in office making these changes for just over a year now, so many of our initiatives are just hitting the streets. That's one reason why I don't have impressive slides or visuals of our successes that we saw earlier today. Frankly, I'm a bit envious of my colleagues who are able to show these signs of progress. But I am very hopeful that these will be a big part of my presentations on this topic for years to come as these initiatives become reality. What all of our work in the Obama administration, and particularly at HUD, comes down to is the fact that home is the foundation upon which we build our lives, upon which we raise our children, and upon which we plan for our futures. This is a basic message, and it's one that is common for all of us. The HDB musical last night made this point quite effectively, and I'm also reminded of our commonality in Minister Jan's comments on aging. We in the U.S. Have what we call the baby boom generation. They're very large, and they're quickly nearing retirement ages. And we face real challenges with the ideas of how do we allow this generation to age in place gracefully and at lowest cost. You might think about what I might call the lift problem here in Singapore, where the country is spending, the government is spending upwards of $500 million a year dealing with this aging issue. It's something we all face, and we all need to embrace this commonality. The same principle, housing as foundation, motivates each of our efforts. When you choose a home, you don't just choose a home. You choose the schools your child attends. You choose the transportation that you take to work. You choose a community. Because of this, we view housing as the perfect platform for driving sustainable outcomes and creating a geography of opportunity. This geography of opportunity will meet the needs of today without compromising the futures of our children and our grandchildren. Let me close by saying that my attendance at this important conference should signal to you two things. As I said at the outset, we in the U.S. recognize that we have not always been leaders in the field of sustainability and sustainable design. Quite the opposite at times, in fact. So we have much to learn from those of you in attendance here, as well as from our other global colleagues. Second, the Obama administration wants the U.S. to be leaders. We want to be real players in this area. We are fully engaged on these issues and are working to transform our cities and metropolitan areas to promote sustainability, livability, and improve quality of life for our citizens and for citizens across the globe. Working in common purpose, I have no doubt that we can and we will take advantage of this historic opportunity before us to shape a more sustainable, inclusive, and prosperous future for generations to come. That is our challenge today. Together, let us rise to meet it. Thank you very much.
Well, ladies and gentlemen, do we have any questions? We'd like to open it to the floor. Yes, we have a gentleman coming up right now, sir. Thank you.
Dr. Boston, thank you for your wonderful presentation. I think you're a wonderful reflection of your administration and your wisdom. A simple question. You've outlined a geography of opportunities for exciting to hear being presented that. But also being familiar with Atlanta and Barcelona, the structural challenges that you face in America are also monumental. And with your insight and awareness into the sustainable equation, I'd be interested to know how you personally feel about the time that it will take to make those changes in the context of the time that we have to address sustainability globally. So it's essentially, will you be able to overcome those opportunities in the time that it takes to actually achieve sustainability?
That was the easy question. your points are well taken, and I guess I would say a couple of things. We don't have a choice here. As a country, And as a world community, we must address these issues. In the U.S., as I mentioned, we have challenges, and I'm hopeful that we can show some early successes, some real early signs that these modifications, these revitalized neighborhoods and communities and these sustainable efforts can translate into much better and higher qualities of life for local citizens. That said, I have no illusions that this is going to happen overnight. It's taken us a long time to get to the place where we are, in terms of Atlanta being, a sprawling metropolis. But even in Atlanta, I've actually been there twice in the last 4 weeks. There are real signs that community is embracing sustainability principles. Tearing down housing that has not really been built in a sustainable way, replacing it with more walkable, livable communities that have mixes of incomes and ethnicities, investing in public transit and the like. So there are lots of things that are happening on the ground. I don't think that 20 years from now, we're going to be able to say that every American city has the compactness and denseness of Barcelona. It'd be great if that happened, but reality is going to suggest that we will not get there. But the United States is a very large country, and if every metropolitan area made a significant investment and commitment, I have confidence that we will be full partners in the world's move toward a more sustainable, less environmentally impactful, and more economically nimble and socially integrated community. So I think that we're on some level at the very early stages of our engagement in this, and as we get momentum, I'm hopeful that when we have this conversation 10 years from now, we'll be remarking on all the tremendous advancements that we would never have imagined could have happened.
Thank you. I'll take that as a yes. Maybe a yes, we can.
Yes, we can.
Sorry, I've got a future business on. My name is Tom Haynes, Creative Innovation in Australia.
Thank you. We have time for just one final question, ladies and gentlemen. Just one final question before we break for lunch. Yes, sir.
My name is Ping Ming, I'm an architect in Singapore. I'm just curious to know, after you've seen the urban environment where you live, whether this is acceptable to the American public to live in high rises, very close to one another. And do you think it's a problem, the acceptance of this kind of living after having lived in your landed housing and sprawling city?
So, it's a challenge. And the way I talk about sustainability in the U.S. is we are not balanced in our development patterns, right? The way we've done it, the way our zoning is established, is heavily skewed toward single-family, large lot, detached housing. And so we don't know really what the market demand for these types of developments are. It's my sense that particularly as we get to a more aged population, that the type of living, high-rise, low sort of, deal with the yard and all that kind of stuff, very close to amenities like movies and the theater and the symphony, we're going to have a lot of people who find that to be appealing and attractive. So our challenge is to make sure that as people age, they really have those choices that they can make. Historically, in our country, they haven't had that so much. And so I think there is an untapped demand that is very present in our country that these sorts of initiatives can help to embrace. So I'm optimistic, but the marketplace and how this plays out is really going to be the tale that tells the story.
Ladies and gentlemen, Dr. Rafael Dr.